joining me to preview his recital this Monday at 8 p.m. in Chenery Auditorium is Leif Ove Onsnes, the 1998 Gilmore artist. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your schedule for this.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So it's been a few years since you were able to appear at the Gilmore Festival, but in those years, you have been very, very productive. There's a complete series of Beethoven concertos on the shelf in our library. I've read the reviews in the New York Times of your collaboration and appearances with the New York Philharmonic, where you're the artist in residence this season. And you have a solo album that was released a few weeks ago that focuses on the music of Jean Sibelius. And it's that's all just the tip of the iceberg, really. So I feel we're very lucky to see you again in Kalamazoo and in a solo recital, which will take us through a program where you touch on many kinds of music and kinds of composers.
Thank you. I'm very lucky to be back. Of course, I have absolutely wonderful memories of Kalamazoo and of the Gilmore Festival and of receiving the Gilmore Award back then. 20 years ago now. So I have very warm feelings. But the place and the people there, so I'm really looking forward to coming back.
I seem to recall that you did have a program scheduled at one of the festivals in years past, but a family situation happened where you welcomed a couple of new family members to your home.
That's right. I had sort of forgotten about that. But I guess I had to cancel when one of my children was born. I have now three children, a 7-year-old daughter and twins that are 4, turning 5 very soon. So it's become quite a different life the last years, that's for sure.
Well, how have you managed to accomplish so much with the recording studios and the concerto appearances and the solo recitals and chamber music as well?
Well, I have tried to restrict the traveling somewhat. I mean, before I got the family, I played about 100 concerts a year. These days, I play around 70 concerts. I guess I make very concentrated tours now, you know, getting home as quickly as I can because I want to take part of, you know, what's going on here at home as well. So I travel about half the year, I guess. And it's always a question of balance. I mean, with a family, there is also less time, obviously, at home to be just studying new things like I used to do. So I restricted a little bit the repertoire that I'm doing. But having said that, as you say, I'm still doing a lot of different things, and I just enjoy it so much, being on stage. And somehow, after I got a family, I found a new joy again of performing and a new freedom on stage. Maybe it's because there are other great responsibilities in life that are in a way greater than the ones on stage, and therefore the moment on stage is maybe more liberating. I don't know.
Your parents were music teachers, and now you have children whose ability for music could be as great as your own, or of any level, really. It makes me think of early lessons. My father also was a music teacher, and some of the lessons you learn very young are some of the simplest, but they're the ones that stay with you the longest. Have you taken care to what you say about music when you're with your children?
Well, for sure, we're trying to let them listen to different kinds of music and and to classical music, which is not so much a part of the society and part of the schools anymore, and kindergarten, wherever they are. So I have sort of found a method of giving certain images of, to, you know, obviously playing a piece like the Carnival of the Animals. It's a very popular thing with my children, my boy. That was his favorite piece for a couple of years, and he just would want to hear it every day. But with other pieces like, you know, I played for them the overture to Marriage of Figaro, and I would just tell them that the piece is all about party. It's really happy music, and then you know, just to give certain images, and I find that really helps with children. Now our oldest started playing the cello, which is very exciting. So, and she's enjoying that a lot. So there's I obviously want them to have the chance to love music at least. I mean, I would find it very strange if I had children who didn't have any. Who was quite indifferent to music. I mean, that would be very strange for me. So I want to give them the opportunity to get to know it. And at the same time, I hope they do something else than becoming a pianist. I mean, but if they would, you know, want to become musicians, that's wonderful. I mean, I love the occupation, so. I hope they also find great joy in music.
As I mentioned before, your program is a mixed program featuring a number of different composers and time periods. What were some of your thoughts in putting it all together?
Well, sometimes I like these programs that are, you know, full of contrasts, and it may seem sort of crazy to go from Sibelius to Beethoven and so on, but these things often make sense. Like, you know, there's a kind of feeling of nature in both of these composers, and so this is a mixture of the first half has some central Scandinavian piano music, which I guess not a lot played in America. I'm starting with Carl Nielsen's Chacona, which is quite exciting for me because it's a piece that I played a lot when I started my career, but I haven't played it for like 15, 20 years. It goes from darkness to light, going from this bass theme, which the piece is then based on the Chacona theme and variations, and very big climax in the middle, and then it ends up in the treble, very filigree, wonderful, heavenly music. And it was written in the First World War, and I think it's a very strong piece of music. It has a sort of strong message. I've always liked it. And then I'm playing a few of the Sibelius pieces that I have recorded on my latest album. And he is totally unknown for his piano music. I mean, he's of course known as the great symphonic composer, but he has very charming piano music. And so this has been a mission of mine to record and to play these pieces a lot in concerts, to convince people that there is great piano music also by Sibelius. And then we're into the Beethoven sonata and, yeah, other things.
If I could ask about the Sibelius.
Sure.
Do they seem to fill in any gaps in our our understanding of Sibelius's personality or favorite ways to compose?
He's often thought of as these large-scale structures, very existential. I mean, we know his symphonies, and they are absolutely wonderful. Some of my favorite music. But he had also really an ability to write charming shorter pieces, also in the symphonic music, which is not so often heard. I mean, we know some of the more famous ones, Karelia Suite, and but when you hear all these other stuff, a lot of incidental music and Peleas and Melisande and wonderful things, and there are such charming, beautiful, and cleverly done movements that are very accessible and haunting. And the piano music is very much that world. There is not a single large-scale piece. There is an early sonata which I don't play and which I don't think is one of his better pieces for the piano. But almost all of the pieces are 2 or 3 or 4 minutes long. But he has such a way of bringing you in to a special place. He tells the story so special with the harmonies, with the meters. He's very clever in you know, there might be 5-bar phrases instead of 4, and you know, it's manipulating you to get interested in and to feel that, you know, oh, maybe this is simple, but oh, there's something very surprising happening around the next corner. It's fascinating music. Great composer, one of my favorites.
Another composer dear to your heart is Edvard Grieg, of course. Any sense that Sibelius might have been thinking of the lyric pieces when he went to write these short piano works?
Yeah, and I think he had hopes that he would have the same success as Grieg that Grieg had with his lyric pieces, because Grieg had such a commercial success with that. But after he published his first book, Opus 12, that was a huge success for him and for his editor and for the Peters edition. And I think Sibelius looked at that and obviously at others and the piano music of Schumann and Tchaikovsky and so on, and thought, oh, I can maybe make some money on writing piano music, and that's what he hoped for. And it wasn't very natural for him because the piano wasn't really his instrument. I mean, he was much more drawn to string writing and to orchestral writing, which was then really his medium, his instrument. So sometimes the piano music feels awkward and doesn't sound so good. And then suddenly there are pieces that are so wonderful. So it's mixed. Not all Sibelius piano music is great, but I have chosen the pieces that I think are really wonderful. I mean, he wrote 150 pieces, you know, for the piano. And for me, at least half of them, you know, really good music.
If you're an experienced pianist coming to works like this, where you can see the composer was struggling against his own unfamiliarity with the keyboard, can you help him out? Can you rephrase and maybe rework some of his pieces?
One can sometimes. I mean, one thing is actually doing it by, you know, creative fingering or things like that. Another way would actually be to transcribe a little bit and to add some notes in there, to change some figurations. There are a few pieces, but just two or three of the pieces where I change some of the texture, because there are some. He loved the sort of shimmering tremolos in the orchestra writing. And often, well, a few places in the piano music, he's writing figures that are clearly, that should have that kind of effect, but they're written out too slowly. So you hear them too much like single notes. So I'm making them quicker and soft, so they would sound, would have that kind of shimmering effect.
I think that's fair.
I think it's allowed to do that. I mean, because I think he would agree that you know that would sound better, and that's what he was after. But what do I know?
You must feel very close to Beethoven as well after years of the Beethoven project, the Beethoven journey, where. You recorded with the, was it the Mahler Chamber Orchestra? And we have a sonata on the program, The Tempest, coming up. Does that transition from the Sibelius, or does that start the second half of the program?
No, it does actually transition from the Sibelius, and it ends the first half of the program. And it's, of course, a very strong piece. Very dramatic, and just opens with an A major chord, the third in the bass, and you wonder what is going on. It's very ghostly. And then it's rhapsodic in many ways, the first moment, and so full of tension and drama. It's absolutely wonderful piece. It's a very wonderfully spacious, beautiful second moment. And the last moment is so obsessive. It's one of the most obsessive moments of this figure again and again and again and again.
In the interest of time, I want to, first mention that the second half has bookended pieces. Pieces by Schubert start the second half and end the second half. It's the Widmann I'm quite curious about, though I wondered if you would shine a spotlight on the Idol and Abyss.
Yes. That's very strongly connected to Schubert, because there are pieces which are supposed to reflect Schubert's two extreme sides or temperaments. Yeah, and you hear Schubert's music through Widmann's world all the time. It's very fascinating how he has incorporated Schubert's figurations and harmonies into his pieces.
Thank you.
very much about Lumen. Everything from the very lighthearted, entertaining music to the abyss, where you have this enormous darkness and melancholy, which is also such a part of Schubert's music. So that's why I've placed it in between these other Schubert pieces. So the whole second half is, in a way, about Schubert, just reflected through a wonderful contemporary piece, or piece from 2009. He wrote these pieces about Schubert.
Have you met the composer? Is it Jörg Widmann?
Yeah, Jörg Widmann is a very prolific composer and clarinet player.
Wonderful
clarinet player. Yeah, and I played with him some chamber music, and I met him several times. He has written lots of different things, from big operas to chamber music. He often plays his own pieces, and there are many. He's getting played a lot now, especially in Middle Europe, Germany, Switzerland, Austria.
You mentioned at the beginning of our interview that classical music doesn't hold the same attention as it did in decades past. What is your view on festivals like the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, and how can it sustain interest in classical music and pianism in the future?
Well, the wonderful thing about festivals is that it's a very concentrated period of time, and it tends to create a lot of local enthusiasm,
mm-hmm.
regional involvement, and I think that's, to my experience, that's very much has happened in Michigan, that people feel an ownership of this wonderful festival, and therefore they would go to several concerts during this period. And I believe very much in this, the festival spirit, if you want.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Leifova, and see you on April 30th at Chenery Auditorium.
Sure. I look forward to that.